at 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. What's going on? Mark Riley's back, thank God.
What up?
Very cranky yesterday. It was difficult without you, man.
I heard you were like a ray of sunshine here.
No. Very cranky. I had a lot to say, but I was too cranky to say it. And
uh-oh.
Then, you know, I was afraid that I was draining people here in the room, draining people in their cars. It was unbelievable. But, you know, those days are happening. That's Mondays. You know, sometimes it happens. Am I right?
It happens.
But it's nice to see you back.
Well, thank you very much.
I hope you had a nice day off, because here I'm saying it wasn't that good. Do you understand, Riley? Wasn't that good here for me without you. If you want a podcast, Morning Sedition, take the show with you every day. Go to MorningSedition.com for details. And it's my understanding that Mark Riley will be on MSNBC's Connected Coast to Coast with Ron Reagan and Monica Crowley today.
Well, not with Ron Reagan.
You're replacing Ron Reagan.
I get to be Ron Reagan.
Whoa, back up. Well, that sounds exciting.
Yeah.
What does that mean exactly to be Ron Reagan?
Well, no, I just get to sit in the warmest chair for a day.
Uh-huh.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, why not?
Sure.
I think it's right up your alley.
It's
going to be good. So there's a big break in the Senate. This is the day we've all been waiting for, I guess. But did anything really happen? I mean, they've made an agreement, a supposedly bipartisan agreement, which seems like, you know, one half Democrat senator, you know, touting the fact that it's bipartisan. But it's not really a bipartisan agreement, is it?
Well, it is technically, because there were 14 members of the Senate, 7 Democrats and 7 Republicans that worked on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I take a slightly more cynical view than most people do. Of why they ended up doing this. And I think it has to do with the fact that they know that most Americans are absolutely not paying attention to this whole filibuster.
And the people that are paying attention, apparently, if polls are correct, which they usually aren't, but I'll take some numbers here, is that they don't want this nonsense going on. They want senators to act like senators. They want the process to continue. They want the Senate to function properly. They're pissed off at both Republicans and Democrat senators, the public that is paying attention. Now, so the filibuster is safe for now, but what does this really mean in the long term? Is this just a short-term fix? Is it just, you know, buying time? It doesn't seem like the agreement they made would stop the would stop them from initiating the nuclear reaction again, the nuclear option.
No, and in fact, the Republicans say that if they believe that the Democrats have violated the terms of this particular agreement, they will go right back to the nuclear option. My question is a very simple one. How in the world can you say that this filibuster fight is somehow unique, or trying to eliminate the filibuster is so important over judicial nominees, when 40 years ago, when the filibuster was used by people in both parties to deny black people their rights, nobody ever thought about eliminating the filibuster.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever said, well, we got to get rid of the filibuster. Look at what it's doing. No. The Civil Rights Act of 1964, the Voting Rights Act of 1965, all of these acts were subject to the filibuster. But nobody said, get rid of it.
Well, why is that then? I mean, why?
Because they were willing to allow racists to use this particular Senate tradition to their own end.
So now when some Democrats, you know, want to use it to stifle activist judges.
Now it's, we got to get rid of it.
Well, these are guys that want to take over the entire country. This majority wants a, you know, sort of a tyranny. They don't want a checks and balances. They just want to bully the Democrats over everything.
And what happened with this compromise, and I find it amazing that some people are saying, well, the left is happier at the compromise than the right. The only way you could actually say that, and it's actually contained in one of the reports that we have, is by saying that the Democrats are in a minority in the Senate. If it ever came up for a full vote, it's entirely possible that the Republicans would prevail. But see, there's a reason why the Republicans backed off. There's a reason why the Republicans did not decide to take this to the stage like they were planning on doing, everybody believes.
A number of reasons, I would imagine. It has to do with particular Senate constituencies, with business interests. There's a number of reasons, no? Or is there one reason that you're
saying? Well, I think there's a number of reasons, one of which is, I remember when I was a kid, I had a friend of mine that used to convince me to play chicken in the middle of this road,
mm-hmm.
right? It was a pretty heavily traveled road, and you stand out in the middle of the road, And you kind of sort of dare cars to hit you. You know?
That was the kind of chicken you played?
Yeah, I was a kid. I didn't know any better.
No, but I mean, we didn't play that kind of chicken. What we did was we used to ride our bikes right at each other. And you know, if whoever didn't, you had to swerve
off. Same kind of chicken. Well,
but with a car, it seems like the odds are sort of stacked against you if you're on a bike.
Well, yeah. Well, we were standing up. We weren't even on bikes.
Oh, you weren't on bikes?
No, we were just running at the car?
I was just waiting to
see whether or not they would hit us if we stood close enough to where they were coming.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that, at least for me, metaphorically, is what happened here. These two opposing sides were playing an elaborate game of chicken, and it is significant that neither Bill Frist, the Senate Majority Leader, nor Harry Reid, the Senate Minority Leader, managed to be part of this group that came up with this so-called compromise. It was actually a bipartisan group of people, exclusive of the leadership. And, you know, we talked about this before we went on the air, Mark. Part of the reason for this is to give Bill Frist a little bit of cover with his already angry conservative base who were saying, when have you sold us out? These people sold us out.
You mean the Christo-Fascist Zombie Brigade base, the extreme right, the religious fanatics?
The Dobson, Perkins, you know, that whole crew.
In the future this would mean that Bill Frist's presidential aspirations are compromised?
I'm not sure if his aspirations are compromised. He's going to have, as Desi Arnaz once said, a lot of splaining to do.
Right. So let's get into you know, what this means exactly. What does it mean for the judges? What does it mean for Janice Rogers Brown, for William Pryor and Priscilla Owens? They will get floor votes now. Is that what happens?
And they will most likely
be approved?
Yeah. And I mean, this is ka-ching for the three of them because, you know, they have been the three that, well, I won't say that they have been the most ideologically controversial, but, you know, Janice Rogers Brown, a very, very arch-conservative African-American jurist from California, Priscilla Owen from Texas, who is supposed to be, you know, the brainiest of all of these nominees, but a woman who never met a corporation she couldn't rule in favor of, mm-hmm. apparently, if you read her record. These are the folks that will probably be approved, and maybe even by the end of business today, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
It's entirely possible. There are four others, of course, and no commitment has been made on them. William Myers, Henry Sodd, William Haynes, and Brett Kavanaugh. The likelihood is that those four will not make the cut. Now, in exchange for this, you know, if you listen to Harry Reid, he seems to say that the nuclear option is off the table. That's not what the Republicans who brokered this deal are saying.
It's not in the language either.
No, it's not in the language. The possibility of a nuclear option, which is, I guess, part of the reason why, well, you know, wheeling Supreme Court Chief Justice William Rehnquist through the Capitol yesterday may have more than just, you know, I got to go see the doctor implications.
It was a billboard for
absolutely. A moving billboard because the where this is eventually going to get played out, and both sides know this already, is in the Supreme Court. When a Supreme Court nominee comes up.
And so that means that the Democrats could filibuster then and they could bring the nuclear option back if they want to, if they decide that they're not playing by that, the Republicans decide that the Democrats aren't playing by the rules.
Yeah, and the Democrats say that they will only bring back the filibuster on that level if the president nominates what they consider to be an extreme nominee. Now, extreme is in the eye of the beholder as far as that's concerned, and maybe what you and I might consider to be extreme isn't what Harry Reid considers to be extreme. But the bottom line is that they are now saying, look, we have this delicate balance, which essentially could, you know, blow up at any time.
Right. So the filibuster struggle for now is over because the filibuster is safe until the Republicans decide that the Democrats have overstepped their bounds.
Exactly. And I think just as importantly, the centrists of both parties now can tell the American people, well, hey, look at what we did. There's not the Senate is not as polarized as most of the American people think it is, and as most of the American people feel in terms of Congress not doing its job.
Sure. And, you know, it's odd because if you look at the president's approval ratings, which we will momentarily, they are not they're not promising, thank God. 866-303-2270 is our number. We will continue this conversation momentarily.
Call us at 866.
Ha! That's awesome. Go on.
303.
Wow, yes. Yes, I love it.
2270.
Oh, yeah, drop the bomb. Drop it. There's not a dry eye in the house. Keep going.
That's 866-303-2270.
Okay, well, just so you know, it was good, but I was also being pretty generous.
This is Hornets Edition on Air America Radio.
now, 800-337-0447. 800-337-0447. 800-337-0447.
Twenty past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo, yo.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Thanks for being here. So look at this. 46% of 1,006 adults polled over the weekend said they approved of the overall job Bush is doing. That's according to CNN USA Today Gallup poll. 46%. Pretty low. That's a down by about 4 percentage points since a poll taken at the beginning of May. Also, when asked to choose, 58% of respondents in the split part of the poll said Republican leaders were behaving like spoiled children on the matter of the filibuster, while 31% picked responsible adults. Democratic leaders were also viewed in the same light, with 54% of respondents disapproving and 36% approving of the Senate's behavior. So that's an interesting revelation, that people want these senators to behave like adults and continue business and stop this bickering, this partisan bickering. And today we get sort of a compromise, but doesn't really seem like anything really happened other than the Republicans get basically confirmed three of their judicial nominees. These activist judges get to go through.
Well, you know, Mark, one of the interesting things about this poll is the question of people's interest in the filibuster. 37% said they hadn't been following it at all. 20% said they had followed it not too closely. That's 57%, a statistical majority, really have not been paying attention to this filibuster thing. What they have been paying attention to, and this is why I think Congress's ratings are so low, you know, why is my gas cost so much? Where, you know, are there jobs actually being created in this economy? How am I going to deal with my retirement? People are dealing with bread and butter issues, and I think that a lot of Americans see this filibuster thing as being totally extraneous to their day-to-day lives.
Well, not to some people, I imagine. Let's talk to Mike here, listening to 1190 in New Jersey. I think he's got a good point. Mike, what's
good
on your mind?
Gentlemen.
Hey, Mike.
First of all, this is Orwellian doublespeak.
Uh-huh.
Second of all,
What is exactly?
This agreement.
Okay.
Second of all, the ones who won were the corporate special interests.
Okay, right. So that was the big concern last week, is that, hey, if the Senate stops business, how do we continue to make money? What about the big business legislation? So you're saying ultimately they're the big winners on both sides.
Well, basically the Democrats had the remedy to stop business in the Senate, invoking Senate Rule 14,
mm-hmm.
which means they could have directly sent bills to the floor of the Senate
mm-hmm.
for up or down vote,
mm-hmm.
which would force the Republicans, let's say, to vote up or down on health care, education, veterans benefits for all the country to see. Now, this probably terrified them. But I think in the end, and I'm very skeptical, especially when a guy like Joe Lieberman.
Yeah, exactly.
I knew he was going to be the whipping boy on this one.
Because it's got to be the corporate special interest, because if the Senate business is ground to a halt, they lose the most.
But you know what, Mike? It's not just the corporate special interests on that level.
Mm-hmm.
Getting Priscilla Owen confirmed in and of itself is a victory for corporate special interests. All you got to do is look at her voting record, not her voting record, her rulings.
But thanks for your call, Mike. But let me ask you a question about what he's saying. Now, the idea that the Democratic senators could have, you know, determined the agenda and forced them on up or down votes on things that mattered, is that really true? Could they really have put them to that?
Yeah, they could have. They
yeah.
absolutely could have. And it would have had the effect of slowing down the Senate business to an absolute crawl. And that's what really scared the bejesus out of the corporations. They got their bankruptcy. They got their restricting victims' rights. They want more. And that's what people don't understand about this whole dance that's being done inside the Beltway right now. The corporate America wants more than what they've gotten from this administration, even in the first 100-and-some-odd days of this year.
Well, they want it all. And this administration, not unlike many Democratic senators, you know, plays to big business more than they do to regular people. I mean, the whole movement of this administration is to defend corporations over human interests.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's take one more call here. Tim, and listening to XM in St. Louis. How are you, Tim?
Hey, Tim.
Good morning, Mark. Mark, how are you, gentlemen?
Good.
All right, man.
Hey, I don't think that this agreement last night is such a truly bad thing. I think what it does is it buys the Democrats time. What we got to look at is that if you take all of the Republican senators and you take their constituents, they only make, they only represent 47% of the population in this country.
Mm-hmm.
So in turn, what the Democrats need to do now is they need to go on a full court press. They need to start getting the media into the media. They need to get the word out about how bad these judges are.
All right. Well,
later on in the session, if they go to try to move these judges up into the Supreme Court, because we know there's going to be vacancies.
It seems like we've had enough time, Tim. Don't you think we've had enough time? I mean, why haven't they done it up to this point? I mean, it's optimistic to think that the Democrats are all of a sudden going to do this. I'm with you. I wish they would. I hope you're right.
Yeah, I don't understand it either.
Okay.
We need to get, as Democrats, we need to start getting into this, to the audio culture of this country. We need to start playing on this two-word culture and just drive it down people's throats. You know?
Okay.
And,
all right. Well,
and if we don't do this, we're still going to be sitting here in a minority in the next election.
All right. Well, I'll get to work on it from where I'm sitting.
Well, you know what, though? Tim brings up a very, very important point out of all of this,
yeah.
And that's the question of next year's midterm elections. How will the compromise that's been reached affect the Republicans and affect the Democrats? And, more importantly, are there structural problems within the Democratic Party? And, Mark, we talked about this at the end of last week, about some other stuff. But are there structural problems inside the Democratic Party, which, if left untreated, will guarantee they're going to lose next year?
Yeah, well, I mean, hopefully they'll be able to use some of this and politicize it in their campaigns. I mean, they can make the Republicans, you know, look like babies. They can make the Republicans look like bullies. They can say that the Republicans pander to corporate interests. There's a lot of things that they can do when they campaign for midterm elections.
Well, they got to triangulate what happens to Rehnquist between now and 06.
Uh-huh.
Will Rehnquist retire or something? God forbid he dies or whatever. Will that vacancy come before November of next year? Will this fight be joined before November of next year? And are the Democrats actually positioned to win the battle?
So you're saying that if they confirm these three judges, if they use that opportunity to make them look as bad as they are, it might help them a great deal in the midterm
elections.
It
might help them a bit. And, you know, symbolism is a heck of a thing, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
We saw that yesterday in stark relief as they wheeled a sitting Supreme Court justice across the Capitol.
Whose idea was that?
Well, we'll talk about it when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Up on me. Yeah, you did. You're a coward.
Randy Rhodes on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. The facts, the fury, the funny. Morning Sedition. Feels like thinking sometimes. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So, of course, we have the iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator to figure it out. So let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. All right. From the New York Times, bipartisan agreement in Senate averts a showdown on judges. Bipartisan agreement in Senate averts a showdown on judges. Translation, Democrats negotiate compromise, trade spine for peace. Yes. From Fox News, Jacko Defense to call Jay Leno and Chris Tucker. Jacko Defense to call Jay Leno and Chris Tucker. Translation, Leno preps for court appearances with a week at Laugh Factory. There you go. All right, from CBS News, Greenpeace asks Hong Kong Disneyland to take shark fin soup off menu. That's pretty complicated. Greenpeace asks Hong Kong Disneyland to take shark fin soup off menu. Greenpeace also accuses Pirates of Caribbean of illegal whaling. Hey, Hong Kong Disneyland opens new exhibit. It's a small world full of endangered species, after all. Anything? All right. So moving onward and inward to where we at now. We were talking about the filibuster. As you know, that's been given a brief pause because the Democrats and the Republicans made, you know, the illusion of a bipartisan agreement. But it seems like just nothing really happened. Three judicial nominees are going to get through. They scared everybody with rolling Rehnquist through the Capitol, and everyone freaked out a little bit. As one of our callers pointed out, it is definitely a bone to big business in the sense that they, on either side of the aisle, they always win. And now we are moving into an abortion bill is going up. The New Hampshire abortion case is going up before the Supreme Court, which would mean right now, I guess what it says is that teens must have parental consent, but if their life is in danger, they are, you know, that can be taken into consideration as to whether or not they can get an emergency abortion. And I guess what some of these abortion rights activists the anti-abortion, what do we call them? We call them everyone should have reproductive freedom, and these people want to deny people
the
rights.
They are anti-reproductive.
That's it. That's exactly right. They're saying that they want to bring it up before the Supreme Court and say that, look, it doesn't matter. A teen should have parental consent no matter what, even if they're about to die.
Well, yeah, and this is a situation, and again, this points up the importance of wheeling the Supreme Court, the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, William Rehnquist, through the Capitol building to go to the Capitol Medical Department. Now, this is not without precedent, but it seems to me, Mark, that this is somewhat like, somebody having to go to the bathroom at Yankee Stadium and deciding to walk through center field to get there or something. It just doesn't make sense, except as a symbolic gesture. And this abortion case that the Supreme Court has agreed to hear is going to have ramifications, even though they're dealing with a New Hampshire law, it's going to have ramifications throughout the country. Now, it was enacted in 2003, the first U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, which is why they want these appellate judges on the bench, by the way. The first U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals said that that law, which said that under all circumstances, a minor who's seeking an abortion would have to get parental notification, not parental permission. But it said that it was unconstitutional because it did not provide an exception to protect the minor's health in the event of an emergency. The state of New Hampshire argued, on the other hand, that other state provisions call for exceptions when the mother's health is at risk, which is an old trick. It's essentially saying, well, we already have that on the books.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that the first U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals felt it was not explicit enough, that it needed to be written so there would be no doubt that if a minor's health was in jeopardy, she would be able to have an abortion and actually the right to choose.
Well, you know, this is just it's these anti-abortion freaks who are just, they want to make it as difficult as possible to get an abortion on all levels. You know, I was watching 60 Minutes the other night about this youth health ministries preacher who does these big concerts to get kids to take a pledge of abstinence. Now, first of all, you know, that doesn't really work. It works maybe 30% of the time, but the long term, it doesn't work. And apparently, a lot of these kids, they're encouraged not to use condoms because they say, in classes in school, in these abstinence classes, they're taught not to the teachers are taught not to give them advice on how to use condoms or say condoms are ineffective. They're preaching abstinence, which, as I said, doesn't work. And now on top of all this, when the kid does get pregnant, you know, there is absolutely no options for them to, you know, to safely get an abortion. It's getting to the point where these things are going to be, you know, completely unsafe and almost impossible to get for people that, you know, that need them, that made a mistake or cannot handle to have that responsibility in their life right now.
Well, that is precisely why all of this battle over the filibuster is going on. Politicians have gotten involved with this because they know that the stakes involving Roe v. Wade and the whole right to choose is wrapped up in the next Supreme Court justice. The court in 2000 ruled 5-4. The state abortion laws must provide an exception to protect the mother's health. Well, if you get one more conservative on that court, it's going to rule 5-4 in the other direction. And that's what people are counting on. That's what people are hoping for. And that's why they're going through all this foolishness.
So whose idea do you think it was to roll the dying Rehnquist through the Capitol? Was that a Rovian trick? Was that
That was my first thought. Well, you know, when we spoke yesterday, I said, hey, man, I didn't say Carl Rove, but I did say that it sounded to me like some Republican trickery, some Republican alliteration.
But it also seems to me like something that Rehnquist could have come up with himself. If
yeah,
he was
it's
watching.
Entirely possible.
I mean, you know, he's the, you know, as evil as he may be, he's not a dumb guy. You know, I mean, and he must have a certain amount of respect for the for something, for the process of the Senate, and he might have just been trying to antagonize or get something going.
Well, yeah, maybe he rolled through there to say to the people that were still working on a compromise, hey, you guys need to keep working and keep at it. Or he might have been saying to the Republicans, these are the stakes involved here, that it is really about the Supreme Court. Janice Rogers Brown, the rest of these people are all well and good on one level, but the prize is the Supreme Court because the ultimate prize is the destruction of Roe v. Wade.
So you're saying that ultimately what he's saying is like, put this aside because we're going to need the nuclear option when the Supreme Court nominee comes up.
Put it in your pocket, use it later.
What's Jerry think from Long Island? Jerry, 1190, what's on your mind?
I think the Bush and Frist win, mm-hmm. the Democrats lose on this filibuster deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's terrible for progressives. First of all, you look at Priscilla Owens. Priscilla Owens has ruled specifically on the issue of minors getting abortions, and she's basically made it very difficult for them to get it. And now Democrats have given away the whole store except for four pieces of furniture,
mm-hmm.
as far as I'm concerned, in this filibuster deal. And once again, Democrats have lost their spine and their guts and other parts of the male anatomy, and they've sold us progressives out, and they seem to stand for nothing other than getting elected and reelected.
And big business interests.
Yeah, these three judges are the worst.
They're
the most extreme of the extreme.
Okay, thank you for your call, Jerry.
I think Jerry may represent the feelings of a lot of people.
Well, certainly a lot of progressives. I mean, you know, we talk about here that there really is no center, and that, you know, the ideals of Democrats and certainly liberals are not being represented at all.
No.
Because these guys, you know, are willing to sell us out for their own gain and also for the gain of big business and also just to stay in the game.
I think Democrats missed out on an opportunity to frame this entire discussion in a different context, and they waited too long before they did it. The fact of the matter is that 97% of George W. Bush's court nominees have been confirmed and are sitting on the bench. We're talking about 3% of the people that he put forward. He put forward 214. At issue here were 10, three of them are gone. It's 7 out of 214, and they never framed it that way.
Now let's talk about this stem cell bill that comes up in the House today. That, you know, this is another thing that Bush swears he'll veto, is that if they pass a bill that will enable embryonic stem cells to be used for important medical research that could save lives. I don't understand, you know, where, I mean, I do understand what they're talking about, but this is ridiculous, Riley. This is something that could help hundreds of thousands of people potentially, and these are not unborn fetuses. These are, you know, these are little wads of cells that have proven to be medically important, yet these people, these religious fanatics that are trying to take over this country, are, you know, just continually put up obstacles to progress.
Well, what we have here is a two-track situation, Mark. On the one hand, there is a bill that's sponsored by Chris Smith in New Jersey and Arthur Davis from Alabama, who, by the way, is a member mm-hmm. of the Congressional Black Caucus, a conservative member of the Congressional Black Caucus. And this is the one that President Bush would back. It provides $79 million in federal money to increase the amount of umbilical cord blood for research and treatment and establish a national database for patients looking for matches. Now, on the other hand, there's a second bill that's co-sponsored by Congressman Mike Castle, a Republican of Delaware, mm-hmm. and Diane DeJet of Colorado, but this is the one that is opposed by the White House. This is the one that Bush says if it crosses his desk, he will in fact veto it. That one lifts the ban that Bush imposed 4 years ago on federal funding for new research on embryonic stem cells.
So this means that whatever happens now, if it comes out in favor of stem cell research, Bush says he'll veto it, and he hasn't vetoed much of anything.
No, he hasn't vetoed much of anything. And by the way, that was an issue in the last election. And you have people on both sides now coming to Washington, descending on Washington to argue their case, including a guy who has sickle cell anemia. Had a stroke when he was 5 years old, this guy. And treatment was so painful, he contemplated suicide. He's now 19 years old, and he had a transplant. And it was apparently a stem cell transplant. And he says, quote, if it wasn't for cord blood, I'd probably be dead by now, end quote.
So that's it. This is the. It's not just an alternative to stem cell, but it could go hand in hand with research. I mean, umbilical cord blood apparently very rich in the same type of stuff that you find in stem cells. But I think both of them should be used for scientific research and for medical progress. Myself. And coming up in a second, you know, good news for people that don't like to wear sunscreen and like to sit out in the sun. Maybe 46 past the hour. Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition.
Hey, come on, wake up. Wake up.
Call us at 866-303-2270.
Why? Why? I don't know why.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
I'm listening.
That's cabinet refacing from Sears Home Services. 1-800-828-1200. That's 1-800-828-1200.
Fifty past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Thank you for tuning in. If you're just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we already talked about on the program. It's time for Morning Sedition's Cliff Notes. Chief Justice Rehnquist visits the Capitol Medical Department. Worried Democrats tried to offer Rehnquist the blood of 100 virgin liberals to prolong his life. Oh, my God. If Rehnquist dies, they might put in another Rehnquist. You see? Nothing really matters. Give up. This is all that matters. I'm Mark Maron. Love me. Trump unveils launch of Trump University. One of the courses is called Horrors. Being one, buying one.
Ooh.
Scientists say sunshine may prevent cancer. Scientists did caution that those orange-brown older guys with gray chest hair still, quote, look pretty creepy. Today's phrase, just drop this into conversation. The sun is actually good for you. Cigarettes make you live longer. And Agent Orange brings plants back to life. Wake up, people. Nothing is true unless a company pays for someone to say it. Someone bought the sun. It's only a matter of time before they turn it off on us. Those are your Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Good news. So how do you like that? My mother's got to be happy there in Florida. She loves the sun. She's always been a big proponent of the sun. She doesn't wear much sunscreen. She has spent hours and hours on end in the sun. Turns out, might be good for you. Apparently, we're kind of like plants, only it's not chlorophyll. It's vitamin D that is generated from the skin if you sit in the sun. A lot of doctors, or a few anyways, are saying that vitamin D helps fight cancer. That's pretty amazing stuff, I think. Lab animal studies show that vitamin D stifles abnormal cell growth, helps cells die when they are supposed to, and curbs formation of blood vessels that feed tumors. How do you like that?
It's some different stuff. I mean, we've been told something completely different, at least about the sun, anyway.
Well, there's a schism in the dermatological community, apparently. The type of cancer that you get from sun, apparently, is not always deadly. It's rarely deadly in relation to melanoma, which is worse, which doesn't come from sun. There's nothing to prove that. And apparently, a lot of these smaller skin cancers are treatable. But it says that the percentage of people that will benefit from vitamin D from the sun is actually larger, a lot larger, in relation to the people that may get that type of skin cancer, which in most cases is treatable. Now, I don't know what the hell to do with stories like these, Riley, when you hear something that you've been told for years is bad for you, and on some level it may be bad for you, but of course the people that are really pissed off are the people that make sunblock.
Yeah, because they could go broke. I mean, what they're saying essentially is that 15 minutes of sun a few times a week with no sunscreen is, in fact, beneficial and helpful to health.
So in moderation, that's always the key. A couple glasses of wine, what is it, one glass of red wine a day is supposed to be good for you.
Yeah.
A couple lines of blow twice a week supposed to be good for you.
Time out. Where did you hear that?
A half a bag of reefer. Am I looking at the right studies? Am I wrong? I mean, I don't do any of them, but I'm told that everything in moderation is okay as long as you are safe and don't hurt yourself.
Well, it seems, Mark, that there are so many, I guess, things that we took for granted over time about health that are now being challenged, and they're almost being challenged like in a ping-pong fashion. One study comes out and says something's good for you. Another study comes out and says the same thing is bad for you. Then a third study comes out and says the same thing that they just said was bad for you is now good for you. So I don't know whether you do, what do you do, 2-1?
Well, I think, you know, what you do is you realize that no one's going to live forever, and you should take care of yourself the best as possible. I mean, instinctually, we know kind of a lot of times what to do. I'm not a big sunblock guy, but I don't spend hours in the sun either. I mean, imagine if you live in Florida, or you live in Arizona, or you live in a place that's constantly sunny, you're going to want to protect yourself because you can't walk around sunburned all the time, especially if you spend a lot of time outside. But once or twice a week, maybe once or twice a month, you want to spend a half hour in the sun and don't blister yourself. Hell, that's all right. I mean, you know this stuff instinctively. It's people that get addicted to it. My mother is like a sun freak. She's like a plant. She just, you know, she likes to lay in the sun for hours. She always has.
Yeah, but what about people whose work requires them to work in the sun?
Well, then you got to take care of yourself. You got to wear a hat. You got to wear sunblock, and you know, and try to regulate it. But who knows? Maybe those people live forever.
Yeah, right.
Vitamin D is also found in oily fishes and in some vitamin supplements, but apparently, it's not the same type of vitamin D that you get from your own skin. And this is not unlike, you know, the liver. The skin is an organ. I mean, the liver can tolerate a certain amount of alcohol, and it's been said, as I said before, that some of it is even good for you.
Yeah.
Another story that is health oriented. That really is you know, pretty freaky to me, is they now have a mechanical, the FDA is considering passing these implants for depression. This is literally something that looks like a pacemaker that they put under your skin, have wires running up to this part of your brain, these nerve cells in your brain, that gives it a mild electrical shock. Okay, and apparently plays a little music. It's a new iPod, Chris. Apparently that they're going to have a subcutaneous iPod that will be implanted just beneath your armpit that you can program with a magnetic bar, and it'll just play right into your brain. Wouldn't that be great? It will alleviate your depression, and also you can, you know.
Party.
You never have to worry about it getting stolen unless someone hits you over the head and cuts you open. But that's a little drastic, isn't it? Who's going to go through that kind of problem on the subway? This is a real thing. It's not the iPod. This is it's a pacemaker. Like device called a vagus, I'm hoping. A vagus nerve stimulator. It's surgically implanted in the upper chest, and its wires are threaded into the neck, and they just give a mild electrical shock. The problem is with this, like most depression treatments, the study, they found that 17 of the 111 patients who had implants turned on and completed the trial showed significant improvement. But 11 of 110 who had no stimulation and completed the trial also felt significantly better. I guess it just matters, you know, what
wow.
You know. Yeah, it means that sometimes just knowing that there might be something helping you helps.
Well, I don't know, man. Something would bother me about coming home and saying, gee, it's been a long day, man. This is really, it's a bad day.
But what if you can turn it up? Like, why don't they just put other wires? Where's the wire into your orgasm center? Where's the wire into where it makes you feel confident all the time? Where's the wire? Like, if you just had this machine that you could switch around, hey, here's the wire that makes me feel like everything's okay, and then I'm at peace with myself. If you just have a little remote control on you,
yeah.
That'd be kind of interesting. I don't know where it would leave your personality. So we're going to continue this conversation in a few minutes, right?
Yeah, this and some more. We're going to talk about Homeland Security. We're going to talk about the filibuster deal that has been worked out and more here on Air.
Six past the hour, it's morning tradition on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hiya.
I'm glad we got through that off mic discussion about what, you know, who likes what kind of sushi and the problem with hand rolls. Chris is like, I don't understand why you can't. Well, how do you eat a hand roll? I mean, if it's not a cut roll, but you didn't even say it in that language. What do you basically? You're like, what are you supposed to do with the sushi cones?
The big roll.
Yeah, you take little bites, but then you have a problem with your biting through the seaweed. This is important stuff, and I think this is cutting edge. This is what makes this show so relevant in the country today, is that we are able to take our offstage conversations about sushi and about the importance of being able to get past the seaweed so you don't get too much seaweed in every bite, and to where the fish and the rice is. And perhaps I think this is a simple matter, Kayla, of you just ordering the cut roll instead of the hand roll. Okay, did we get through that?
Yeah, thank
are
you
we okay?
Much.
I'd like some.
Free golf?
Anyways, let's get into the. Let's not start a war. Do you want to start? No, I'm not going to start one. We've got important news here. Apparently, the Democrats and the Republicans have made some sort of compromise that doesn't really do much of anything other than allow three of the judicial nominees to get through anyways. and puts off the possibility of the Republicans enacting a nuclear option until they decide the Democrats have transgressed the rules of this particular agreement. Now, McCain's office is the one where they all sort of huddled and worked this out. Right, Riley?
Yes, they are. There were 14 senators, seven Democrats, seven Republicans. And they, as the Senate was apparently some of these, some of other members of the Senate were bringing cots into the upper house because they felt like they were doing all night debate on this.
They were going to the mattresses, as they say, where Chris lives. I mean, in New York.
Why you gotta personalize it like that?
Because I just want to. There's no mafia, though, right, Chris? There's no mafia?
No such thing.
Thank you, Mr. Hoover.
Thank you. And from Staten Island, no such thing as a mafia.
Well, I don't know, man. Do you think the mob got them to get this compromise together? They've been working on this now for weeks. Remember that Frist and Reed were working on a compromise. Those talks fell apart last week.
And they weren't present in this meeting in McCain's office. Is that a blame dispersal thing? Is that something to keep themselves distant from this? Or how does that work? Why were neither of the House leaders involved in this?
Well, what happened was as the House leaders, as the Senate leaders began to negotiate among themselves, the two of them, Frist and Reed, you had this bipartisan group of people who decided to take this away from the leadership, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that some Republicans felt, I can't speak for all of them, but some Republicans felt that Frist, by going to that Justice Sunday, you remember that a few weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
That he had gone too far in the direction of using this nuclear option. And there were people on the Republican side of this that did not want to see that happen just so he could run for president in 2000.
Does this not enable him to wash his hands of it in retrospect? Doesn't this enable him a certain amount of blame dispersal power to say, you know, hey, look, to say to that fanatic right of his base, to say, hey, you know, it was out of my hands. These guys are moderates. I don't know what the hell to do with them.
Well, it does allow them to do that to some small extent. But see, when a majority leader of any congressional body, House or Senate, stands aside and lets others who are not majority leaders fashion this kind of thing, somebody's going to sit up and say, well, what do we need him for?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? There's a point at which you have to ask yourself, why is it, how big a force in the Senate is Bill Frist if he had to stand and say he couldn't negotiate a deal with Harry Reid and other people, especially John McCain, against whom he may run in 2008, gets the credit for brokering this deal?
Now, does this also, let me just ask you this, Riley, does this also mean that there is a possibility in the future that these guys who were involved in brokering this deal, McCain, Warner, Byrd, and some of the other Democrats, you can read the list in a second, does this mean that some of these Republicans in the future, if Frist or somebody decides to enact a nuclear option because the Democrats did something that he doesn't like, that some of these Republicans will stand in the way of that in a vote?
I don't know that that's necessarily the case. It's going to depend on where these people. Now, for example, I might think an Olympia Snow might be from the senator from Maine or Susan Collins from Maine. They might stand in the way. Some of these other guys, forget about it. DeWine and these other people, no. They're not going to stand in the way of Bill Frist if he decides. Mitch McConnell's another one. They're not going to stand up and say, well, okay, you know, I disagree with Bill Frist using the nuclear option. I think what the Republicans are hoping for here is that there will be some degree of solidarity if the leadership decides they do want to use the nuclear option.
Hey, Rodney, listening to WKOX in Massachusetts, what's on your mind about this?
Hey, Rodney.
Hey, how y'all doing? I love the bit about the sushi. I just love that seaweed myself. I'll tell you that.
These are important issues.
I know. I'm on it. I'm on it.
There you go.
Here's my question. Let me just make sure I'm clear on something. If later on in this session the Republicans have reserved the right to decide if the Democrats are using the filibuster in an extreme situation or not. So this extreme right-wing Republican group gets to decide what's extreme or not. Is that right?
Yes. That's, I mean,
okay.
That,
yeah.
So it's being spun as a compromise.
Yes, that's what I think.
I'm going to spin a compromise here. The other week when I got mugged, the guy, you know, pulled a knife on me. He said, you know, give me your money, or I'll cut you.
Yeah.
And so we worked out a compromise. I gave him my money, and he agreed not to cut me. We worked out a further deal.
Yeah.
That in the future, if I run into him on the street, I'll just give him my money.
I was afraid you were going to take him a credit card.
Yeah. I mean, if it's a real extreme situation, but he gets to decide whether it's really extreme, know, and he can still cut me if he feels like, you know, I'm, you know, not really.
Exactly.
It's not really an extreme situation. I'm just making it up.
I think you have a good handle on this, Rodney.
Yeah, I think I do. And I think that what I want to, you know, predict is, you know, in the next few days, there will be a spin offensive by Democratic leaders.
Yeah.
To tell us what a great, glorious victory this is. Just like, and to tell us that, you know, we got to pick our battles once again, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, this is...
It's already happening today.
I'll play
it for you right now. Thanks for your call, Rodney.
Yeah.
Hey, Chris, can we hear the 78% Republican Joe Lieberman and his comment after this?
I should say how great it is to be a member of this band of brothers and sisters. We came together and did the unexpected in a Senate that has become increasingly partisan and polarized. The bipartisan center held.
You know, that's Joe Lieberman yesterday after they pulled this thing off.
Yeah.
Now, that story the guy told about the mugging reminded me of something. I was a fat kid. You know, I'm not a fighter in terms of physical fighting. And I had one of these moments where I was walking down the street with a friend of mine. This was, I guess I was in my 20s. And we saw this bully kid. You know, about to beat up the fat kid.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and it was one of those things where as grown-ups we sort of stepped in, but we just stood there for a second, and the fat kid was saying, "Hey, look, you know, this other guy's going to kick my butt tomorrow, so why don't you just do it tomorrow too? Because you know it's already going to happen." And I thought that, you know, if you both do it tomorrow, just putting it off.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, what his point about the metaphor with the mugging is that this doesn't do anything other than confirm. Most likely confirm three judicial nominees that are no longer going to be fought, right?
Yeah.
And there are seven more that may or may not be confirmed.
It seems as though, and I mean the inference, if you listen to the Democrats in this deal, the inference is that those four are going to get hung out to dry. Now, there's no guarantee in the language of the compromise that they will be totally abandoned.
Right, four other ones.
Yeah, but the down low is that they're not going to push those four. They're going to push the three. Priscilla Owen, Janice Rogers Brown, and the third guy. I'm sorry, William Pryor.
And then, and because of the weird appearance of Chief Justice Rehnquist rolling through in his like ghost-like state, either at his own behest or the behest of a Republican strategizer, maybe Roe, maybe somebody else, that it was basically a signal saying, look, this is what, you know, is going to happen. Put this off. You might need to use the nuclear option for the Supreme Court nominee.
Yeah, and William Rehnquist, of course, was being wheeled to see a doctor in the Capitol Medical Department. The Supreme Court inexplicably has nurses but no doctors on duty to deal with it.
It was a show.
I don't understand. Oh, yeah, well, it was.
Of course it was a show. They played music for him going through, and everybody stood up. No, I'm not. I don't know if that's true. They had an intro. There was dry ice, you know, smoke. And then he comes out.
Like an Earth, Wind & Fire concert.
Right, yeah, exactly. Exactly. So if you're curious how Bush is doing in the face of all this and in approval ratings, we will tell you in just a few seconds. So stay here. It's 15 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Join the morning sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
So call us right now. 800-430-9571. 800-430-9571.
Twenty past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. There's a Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. There's no reason we can't celebrate. 46% of 1,006 adults polled over the weekend saying that they approved of the overall job Bush is doing. That's 46%. That's almost the lowest ever. So he's going down in terms of approval rating, which is a good sign because from where I'm sitting, makes me happy. All right. Both Democrats and Republicans in the Senate fared badly on the judicial nominees issue when asked to choose. 58% of respondents in the split part of the poll said Republican leaders were behaving like spoiled children the matter of the filibuster struggle, while 31% picked responsible adults, and those people, of course, are children. Democratic leaders were viewed almost in the same light, with 54% of respondents disapproving at 36%. Approving the childishness level of politicians really starts to become apparent to me. We are going to talk to a grown-up politician in a few minutes about Homeland Security. We have Representative Benny Thompson from Mississippi 2nd District, who is a ranking Democrat on the House Homeland Security Committee. And we're going to ask him about some of these issues in Homeland Security in terms of how much money was spent post 9/11, how much was it effectively spent, what about the technologies that were half-baked, how much is going to be spent to maintain those technologies, and how much of this is how much of Homeland Security is really a slush fund type of situation where a lot of military and security contractors were paid for a lot of half-baked plans because they had access to the money and they had access to the people that were in charge of the money. Right now, I'm going to tell you my dream from last night because it's important. I'm in a microscopic capsule coursing through my own bloodstream. Me and a crew are going after the congestion in my chest. You know why I do this, don't you, Rod? It's because my therapist told me I had to do this on the air.
Yeah.
So we're in a little ship. Donald Pleasance is there. A little creepy. But here's the good news. So is Raquel Welch. Man, can she fill a jumpsuit. But anyway, our little submarine is headed down the bronchial tubes into my lungs. I switch the spotlight on and, ooh, not pretty. It's a wall of phlegm in there. No wonder I can't breathe. So I put on my diving suit and I tell Raquel, I'm going in, baby. She licks my cheek before I put my helmet on. I swim out into the thick green jelly of my lungs and try to chip away at it with a claw hammer. It was like trying to hammer wet glue. Then I set off some explosives. Nothing. That just moved it around. Then I got out a blowtorch. Nothing. That just seemed to make it angry. It's like a Mount Rushmore of snot in there. So Donald Pleasant says, Mark, the sensor readings say your chest is filled with anxiety, which is holding in the phlegm. If you relax, maybe it will loosen it and you can cough it up. Relax. Great, now I'm screwed. Everyone in the castle knows relaxing is the one thing I can't do. Tugging at her jumpsuit zipper, Raquel says, come here, Mark. I think I can relax you. Then, well, let's just say after that I was a little relaxed. My chest heaved and our tiny ship was blasted out of my mouth at 400 miles an hour and into a Kleenex, which was flushed into the East River and floated out to sea, then eaten by a fish, which was caught in the North Atlantic and served in a restaurant in Queens, which was eaten by me. How do you like that full circle ecosystem? P.S. I'm still congested, right? Uh-oh. So what does that mean? I woke up and my bed was filled with mitochondria. Very important in cellular processing. Do you understand? Do you dig? Okay, so let's get into this Homeland Security stuff. Riley, did you know that after 9/11, immediately after, when the country was put into massive freakout mode, mm-hmm. and security was the utmost priority for the administration and its contractors, $4.5 billion was spent on screening devices to monitor the nation's ports, airports, mail, and air. And now the Department of Homeland Security is going to spend billions more because of many of the devices in question never worked quite right.
Well, not just the devices, the people. I mean, you're talking now about a study by the Office of Management and Budget back in February that found that out of 33 Homeland Security programs it examined, only 4 were effective. In March, the Homeland Security Department itself had its Inspector General study the same thing and said that there was a lack of improvement in the performance, for example, of passenger screeners. And, Mark, the thing that jumps out at me about this, and mm-hmm. we're going to be talking to Mississippi Congressman Benny Thompson about it shortly, is that the people that Homeland Security did business with reads like a who's who of corporate America. Unisys, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, General Dynamics, Accenture LTD. Now, take a wild guess what Accenture LTD used to be just a few years ago.
I don't know. Tell me.
Arthur Anderson.
Oh.
They changed their name.
Okay.
But apparently not their stripes. These folks are, and see, my problem with this is that we are constantly told as Americans that corporate America is this benign force in our lives, that we're dealing with a bunch of people who are extremely competent at what they do. And then you start reading these stories about how corporate America has behaved in the area of Homeland Security, a really big concern of many Americans. And the fact is, They've been acting like incompetent boobs through this whole thing. Of course, making money, but still acting as incompetent.
But is it incompetence, or is it just that they pitched these half-baked ideas because they could, because the climate was right for them to make big sales? It seems a lot of these people were also military contractors, weapons contractors. Some of the concern that I've read about is that if this keeps up, that we're going to get military spending and defense spending up until, you know, Cold War levels. That it just, what's ironic to me is that a lot of this stuff wasn't working properly. It doesn't secure secure us in a lot of ways, and that the spending that is put into military and security corporations, as you're saying, is going, you know, through the roof because they're opportunistic on some level, aren't they, Riley?
Well, yeah, they are. Like a virus, they're definitely opportunistic. Look, one Homeland Security Division, the chief contracting officer, said he wasn't sure how his agency had spent $700 million. More than one-third of this guy's budget was listed under other.
And some of these guys don't know. They don't know if a $1.2 billion spending is an oversight or they actually spent it. And also, some of these corporations are going into partnerships with the government, which is not something that used to happen because the long view is that they have to evolve technology that they don't even know is going to work. So they sign these 10-year protracted deals with the Department of Homeland Security without knowing if the results are even going to be a functioning machine.
Pass the money and hope for the best. Man, we're in the wrong business, man. I keep telling you.
So Benny Thompson is going to continue this conversation with us when we come in just a few minutes. America,
and there you go.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
The sound, the fury, and all the fireworks live. History in the remaking. Next time on Franken.
Past the hour. Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Hey.
The show is Morning Sedition. You're listening to Air America Radio. We were talking, continuing the conversation about Homeland Security, $4.5 billion spent on screening devices to monitor borders, airports, mail, the air itself, many millions of dollars sort of spent and not much results in some respects, some results, but there's been questions as to, you know, how the Department of Homeland Security is run. Is it understaffed? Is it being bullied by corporations who see a lot of free money there? Well, we will be asking someone who knows. Mississippi Congressman Benny Thompson is the ranking Democrat on the Homeland Security Committee, and he joins us on the phone from Mississippi this morning. Good morning, Congressman. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Congressman.
Thanks for being with us. You know, there's a lot of reports out that a lot of the money spent, we're talking billions of dollars spent on devices, machines, systems, was jumping the gun a bit in terms of the technology not being effective and it not really doing what it was supposed to do. Is this true?
Well, I think the reports are quite revealing. As you know, many of the items were questionable. The technology was basically somewhat on the downside in terms of being obsolete. And the department had the charge of trying to stand up an agency and try to get us as secure as fast as possible, and hindsight says that we probably moved too fast using not the best technology and as well not the best business practices.
Okay, is there any indication that maybe some of these corporations, some of these manufacturers, some of these people with this half-baked technology were taking advantage of the money available there and the fact that the Homeland Security Department was a bit understaffed in some ways?
Well, there's no question about that, and the kind of contracts offered were basically open-ended.
Mm.
They could modify them on a daily basis, and so you might have a contract for one amount, that over the life of that contract, it might triple. So there were no controls in place, no systems to pick up any impropriety, because basically you're relying on a private contractor to keep his or her word that they are doing what's in the best interest of the company and not in the best interest of the country. So what we have is a system that was rushed out in the name of Homeland Security. Some of the benefits have been workable, but all of the reviews say that they absolutely can be done better.
Congressman, there are a couple of articles on this. I'm sure you saw the one that's in the Washington Post and also one in the New York Times. And the inference out of these articles is that political deadlines may at some point be at fault for this rush to get these different systems, many of which are obsolete by the time they come online, I guess, to get them into the airports, to get them into the system. Is there too much politics involved in deciding how this stuff is being used?
Well, I think the issue is whether or not the resources to implement the policies are there. We are charged as members of Congress to get certain products out. We charge our employees with that responsibility. To whatever extent they are not able to do it, they can come back and say, we need more time. Clearly what we saw was a system that was manipulated by outside contractors to limit the number of people who could participate in the contract, to set the standards so high that very few people could meet them. And so in many instances, we had two or three individuals as the only people who met the qualifications to even bid on the work. And in many instances, many of those individuals were former employees of the federal government who basically knew how the system worked.
But, Congressman, we're talking about corporate titans like Unisys, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, General Dynamics, Accenture. What does it say about corporate America that these companies that are pretty well known across the country don't seem to be able to get their act together with regard to Homeland Security?
Well, it says that what we have to do as members of Congress, demand a better product. And the only way we can demand that better product is through the Department of Homeland Security. And we have now, as you know, jurisdiction finally over the department. We have also oversight responsibilities. And I can assure you that a lot of the things that have been raised in recent articles will be discussed in a public manner in those subcommittees.
So did you get some more staff in the Homeland Security Department? It seemed that there was a very few people in charge of a great deal of money who were being pitched and sold.
Well, that's absolutely correct. Some of this we are only getting ourselves through the news media.
Mm.
We've been assured from the secretary on down that they've had enough staff. But as we look into the bowel of the organization, Clearly, there are some discrepancies. For instance, we found that the Inspector General's office is only one-third of the staff that they really need to do effective internal oversight.
Mm.
We've tried to get more employees into that operation, and the Republican administration rebuffed us each time we've tried to put more people there to help. So it's a constant struggle that we're after. To try to get more people in the system. Another thing we found out is that there are a significant number of contract employees working in the department who are not DHS employees, but they are placed there by contractors to the government at a significantly higher rate of pay than you would have ordinary employees. So you have a dual personnel system operating, and so all that leads to just what you're talking about right now.
We're talking to Ranking Democrat on the Homeland Security Committee, Mississippi Congressman Benny Thompson. Now, let's follow that up a little bit, Congressman Thompson. You're saying that some of these guys who work for contractors are within the Department of Homeland Security or not Department of Homeland Security employees, but are in charge of oversight of the contracts that their employees actually have with the government. And some of these cats actually, work for the federal government at some point in time.
Absolutely.
All right. So now my big question is, then, Congressman, is that are the Republicans sort of, it seems like a lot of these corporations are old school military contracts. Is there any sort of reaching out to some of the high-tech industry that might not be Republican pawns?
Well, one of the things we've tried to do is open the process, and it's taken a significant effort on our part to get some of this information out. Now, we've been assured by the new secretary that as soon as he reviews this organization top to bottom, many of those practices will stop.
Mm.
But in the interim, we are continuing to demand accountability. We're continuing to say to the department, excuses can no longer be accepted. The issue with our borders, absolutely intolerable. Our borders are very poor. The president refused to ask for the number of people that everybody indicates that we need to secure the borders. The technology that we use to supposedly help secure the borders is flawed and in many instances never worked. But internally, we've not been able to get the department to step forward and say many of these things that we've done were absolutely wrong The technology was obsolete. So we're having to make this organization be accountable. And it is a very difficult task.
Congressman, one thing that jumps out, because certainly for most Americans, the point at which they come in contact with Homeland Security is with airline screeners, passenger screeners. Now, the budget for airline passenger screeners went from $104 million to $741 million in less than a year, yet the screeners failed to detect bombs at the same rate as they were when the contract was $104 million. Why should the American public not think that they're getting shafted here?
Well, you know, we've just gotten the responsibility for TSA under the jurisdiction of our committee. We are quite concerned about this. There are other problems associated with airport screeners. You realize that people who clean the planes don't get screened.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there are just a number of things. There's no policy that says you have to take off your shoes when you go through the X-ray line. But every airport I go in, they tell you to take off your shoes. And if you ask about the policy, you get the extra screening. So you're being penalized for questioning the system when, in actuality, the system is not the best. The technology we use for screening is already obsolete.
Yeah.
And so there are so many things that says that this department is fraught with inconsistencies that borders on incompetence. To say that the flying public absolutely should demand a better system. And from my vantage point, our committee, the Democrats on the committee, will be doing that.
Well, I'm certainly scared, Congressman.
Well, I tell you, you know, I've been privy to some of the briefings that would say that given how porous the system is, you have reason to be.
Oh, good.
Well, Congressman, one really short question. Do you think that the Congress itself has its priorities misplaced when there's a huge hue and cry and a battle over a filibuster while all of this waste and mismanagement is going on at the same time and it's flying under the radar?
Well, you know, we have a hell of a system here in Washington where we deflect real issues for issues of non-importance. I fly to Washington like most members of Congress on planes where the cargo in the belly of the plane is not even inspected.
Mm.
And we can't even get our members of Congress to pass laws saying inspect the cargo that are on passenger planes. Now, that doesn't even count the other cargo that's moved across this country. So there are a number of inconsistencies that we try to deal with, that it is absolutely impossible with this administration.
Well, I guarantee you some of those Republican congressmen are probably being flown by Lockheed.
Well, you know, more important than that is they run the gauntlet of saying that they want to protect this country from the terrorists. But when it comes to implementing sound policy to protect us, they're not willing to do it.
Strong words. Thank you, Congressman Benny Thompson. A pleasure talking to you.
Thanks, Congressman.
Thank you.
You take care. It's pretty profound.
It's pretty scary.
Yeah, it's scary.
He can't even secure the plane he's flying on, for God's
sake. Can you believe that? They don't check the car. I didn't know they didn't screen the cleaners, the cleaning guys who come on the plane.
Nope.
That's ridiculous. And now they're going to, we have this story sitting right in front of us about this new thing that they're going to use to screen people walking in. And, you know, I'm not willing to give them that type of raw information on me. if you know what I'm saying, we'll continue this conversation in a second. It's 46 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Join the morning sedition.
Right now,
call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Support our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. Operation Truth. We were there.
Paid for by Operation Truth, Incorporated.
Past the hour, actually 51 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's morning's edition on Air America Radio, talking about Homeland Security. And these airport screeners might get this machine that can look right through your clothes. I mean, some of you have seen this. I saw reports on it a while ago, but it might happen. And I'm a little uncomfortable with it. But apparently, the success rate at scanning people with the machines and finding weapons is so low that they might engage these machines that look right through your clothes, Riley. And I don't know about you. I understand, first of all, the training period for using these machines is going to take weeks just to stop the people from giggling. You know what I mean? They're going to how often is that going to happen when someone's walking through the screener and a guy goes, hey, come here, dude, come here. Check this out. How often is that going to happen? Women, too, like, oh, my God, look at this guy.
Nice.
How often? And apparently, if you're really fat, they're going to have to frisk you. So now it's like, no, because if you can hide weapons in your fat, it's not going to show up on even these things.
Really?
So this is, yeah. So I'm uncomfortable with this for one reason. It's because the least that you can have in this world, the one thing that you have to protect your privacy on some level is the freedom to know that you'll walk out into the world saying, at least I got pants on. All right, at least my butt isn't hanging out here. At least I have that. And now they got these machines where it's like, sorry, you don't have that anymore.
Hey, let me tell you something. No, you're not being ridiculous. Look, this just goes to prove that old thing that you know, mothers tell kids, always wear clean underwear. Because I guess these X-ray specs will be able to tell.
Dude, they're going to look right through your underwear. It's got nothing to do with underwear. They're going to see they're going to see all the equipment. They're going to see everything.
Everything?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm not that vain, and on some level, I don't mind being naked. I'm a comfortable naked person. You know, I'm the kind of person, I'll walk around my apartment naked. I have a sneaking feeling that the people across the way are familiar with it. It's not that I'll do it. Once I see that there's people across the way, I'll be like, you know, I'm going to put my robe on. It's not like I'm standing in front of the window dancing or anything, but I'm generally comfortable naked. But this would make me a little awkward because then you walk through the screen and you got to deal with the smirking lady. Do I have to deal with that? With the lady like, hi, how you doing?
Yeah.
You know, not that everything's okay. I think I'm reasonably, anyways.
Reasonably what? Well adjusted?
Yeah. But I mean, I'm not really hung up about that, but it's a very vulnerable position to be in, I think. And they're going to have to train people not to giggle and smirk and make comments or take pictures.
Well, this is early 21st century technology. Mark, by the time we're probably in our 90s or something, they'll have something that won't be intrusive. You'll be able to put a finger into something and they'll be able to tell your entire life story or come up on a screen. But not now. Okay. It's going to take. No, you know, I mean, look, remember that 30
talk to
years
future ago, Mark about that tomorrow.
Yeah, 35, 40 years ago, the Jetsons had something just like this, right?
Yeah, well, it's finally we're catching up with cartoons.
There you
That's
go.
One way to look
That's
at it.
That's the lesson.
You know, it's not always easy being a liberal. We all stray from the straight and narrow from time to time, but we need to unburden ourselves. We can always confess our liberal sins. If you want to take a turn in the liberal confessional, give us a call at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. But right now it's my turn. Bless me, Brother Riley, for I have sinned.
How can I ease your burden, my son?
Well, I'm feeling a lot of guilt about my weekend, Riley.
What did you do? Drink?
Mm-hmm.
Yell at somebody?
Mm-hmm.
Bump someone out with one of your moods?
No. I went to the movies. I hung out with my wife, walked around in the sunshine, went out to dinner. It was great. It was so relaxing and perfect, you know? I had a great weekend, Riley.
So what in the world are you feeling bad about?
Well, because while I was having this great weekend, someone came up to me and said, hi, Mark, I'm so glad you're on the radio. There's so much bad stuff happening in the world, and we really need you to do what you do. And she said, and she says it, you know, like right to my face, Riley.
Yeah, well, terrific, Mark. You've got a really nice compliment.
Yeah, but that's just it. I wasn't doing anything. So I tried to cover. I was like, yeah, I was just thinking about all the bad stuff, you know, in the world. Poverty and war and my plans to fix all of it. But that was crap. I just come from the Russian baths.
Why did you go there?
What do you mean, why did I go there? I went there specifically not to think about any of the stuff she was praising me for. I was trying to sweat the stuff out of my system like a toxin. It's getting to where I can't allow myself to step away from the cause for even a moment. God help me, I'm a role model. Oh, my God, that's horrible. I'm being depended upon, and it's freaking me out, Riley.
Mark, I think I have a good idea for your penance.
All right, what is it, Riley?
This is all stuff you're inventing in your own head. You're beating yourself up. You're allowed to take breaks. That's what weekends are for. I want you to go to a printing shop and have cards made up to say this. Thank you for your kind words. But right now, Mark Maron is enjoying a leisure activity. Mark uses his weekends to recharge. Know that Mark's commitment to liberalism is stronger than ever, but only Monday through Friday. And that's okay.
Okay, so you're saying when people come up to me, I can just throw one of these cards at them and run? Because that's really what I want to do, Riley.
Well, for now, yes. Now go forth and sin. no more.
Amen. Well, thank you, Riley. Thank you, Brother Riley. That is helpful. And wow, this is like, if anyone else, you know, wants to confess, it's time. And you can seek absolution in our liberal confessional. You can give us a call right now at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. You know, it was weird. I really did... I had a good week. I don't want to feel bad for that stuff anymore. I'm going to purge it.
You shouldn't feel bad for that. Yeah, purge it. There you go.
I'm going to do it again. I'm going to go to the Russian baths every week. But, I'm glad I got off my chest, and you definitely helped me out. So, again, if you have a sin, you've transgressed the liberal cause, 866-303-2270 is our number. And we're going to, we got a lot of stuff coming up in the show. It's we've got Robert McChesney coming up later, and he's a media critic. And we're going to talk to him about PBS and about the state of the media and about many other things. But right now we're taking liberal confessions at 866-303-2270. Brother Riley, when this commences, we will have to give some penances.
We will give some penances and cleanse people of their sins. And we're going to hear from a certain guy named Small next on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
This morning's edition on Air America Radio. We're lining up your confessions for those of you in line to go into the liberal confessional, 866-303-2270. Mark Riley will be on MSNBC's Connected Coast to Coast as Ron Reagan Jr. tonight and Monica Crowley today at 5 p.m. Eastern time. All right, Riley. So,
of course,
you're going to take a little different approach than Ron Reagan. You're going to be a lot more intelligent.
Well, I don't know. He seems like a pretty smart guy. Nice guy, anyway.
Oh, you're so nice.
Hey,
46% is the approval rating of our current president, which is down about, a little bit.
Four points.
Yeah, a lot. That's good news. Also, on the Senate floor, the filibuster will remain intact for the time being. They put it off until the Republicans decide to reenact the nuclear option. That's all they've done. They put it off. The Democrats have not so much laid down as much for allowed something to happen. Three judicial nominees will now most likely get through with the confirmation, and they rolled out Rehnquist to scare everybody, the Republicans did, and basically say, look, why don't you hold on to that nuclear option until I need to be replaced, which is soon.
Soon, very soon. And now all of these folks are saying, oh, gee, the center is back. We'll see.
Well, let's take a couple confessions here. Andy, listening on Sirius in Boston, what's up? What's your sin, Andy?
Hey, forgive me, Father Marks, but I have sinned.
Oh, what have you done?
I consider myself to be a very, very open-minded person.
Mm-hmm.
I try to be a good person.
Mm-hmm.
I work in retail sales, and I deal with an awful lot of people.
Uh-huh.
And I just find myself kind of constituting my own brand of racial profiling, shall we say. Let me explain.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
When I'm trying to help my customers, I try to give them the best service possible, and I just find that I have a very hard time and a very almost... not dislike, but hesitance to help people of an Indian ethnicity because mainly I'm just tired of being haggled over fixed prices and stuff like that, and it just...
So you're saying that the Indian people that you've come in contact with at your place of business enjoy haggling, even though the prices are fixed, and now you will not serve them because you don't want to haggle?
Well, I won't. Sir, it's not that I won't serve them. I will serve them, but it's one of those, let me see if I can pass them off to somebody else, kind of.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what you sell, but I'm afraid that your penance is going to have to be to haggle with everybody for at least 3 days. That whoever, I don't know what you sell, but now it's haggling time, and I don't know how you're going to do it. Either you're going to have to say that the price is more, but you're going to have to haggle with everybody, and not only that, you're going to have to fight to serve your Indian customers.
I will.
You got to be the first in line.
Because you know this is eating at you, and you know it's wrong. And you know, I think maybe a little haggling wouldn't hurt you. It sounds like you're a little too set in your ways.
Yeah, I, You know, that's why I'm confessing it.
Okay, there well, you thank go. You. I hope I helped you out
thank
there,
you.
Andy. Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay.
Well, I didn't know there were that many Indians in Boston.
No, I don't know where they could. Well,
I don't know. I don't, I'm sorry, I said
of course you
do. Oh, well, I'm sorry. We're talking about indigenous people, or are we talking about the people
from... I'm assuming from India.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm not assuming that they're indigenous people. Yes, they have a bartering culture, I've been instructed in my
yes,
head.
That's
yes.
true.
Tim, what is your sin, Tim, listening in Miami to WINZ?
Hey.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, what's going on?
All right. Well, in 2002, I met a girl who is currently my fiancé.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, I really didn't have any political affiliation. I was very kind of naive to the whole situation. And she is a very hardcore liberal, turned me into one as well. And at the time, she asked me who I happened to vote for in 2000. Being, this naive child that was at the time, I didn't know any better, and I had voted for George Bush.
What did you tell her when she asked you?
I told her that I got disenfranchised, and I...
Are you black?
No, I'm not. I got, I graduated high school, and they signed us up in senior year of high school, and someone managed to shred all our... I lived in a very democratic area, and someone managed to shred all of our... sign of papers, so none of us in my high school class got to vote.
So wait, you constructed this strange, ornate lie to basically to have sex with this girl, right?
Well, it's just fiance, man. It's not just sex.
She's currently my fiance, and as of now, she has no idea that I voted for Bush. She thinks I didn't vote in 2000.
Yeah, but not only did you not vote, but you constructed this strange, ornate lie.
Yeah.
Is she there with you now, Tim?
No, absolutely not.
Oh, obviously, you know what your penance is. I mean, this is the kind of thing you're going to have to face the fire, dude, and be honest and tell her the truth.
Yeah.
And that's just for starters. What else haven't you been telling her the truth about?
Oh, that's about it. I've been completely honest.
Well, you know what they say, and I can vouch for this one. You can't get married with secrets, you know? If you're going to plan on marrying her, I think you're going to have to, you know, tell her exactly what you just told us.
What good could that serve?
What do you mean, what good could it serve? I mean, it's festering in you, and you know, and you constructed this this huge lie.
It's in the past.
Yeah, it's in the past, but you called a radio show at some ungodly hour in the morning to share this with us. You must have something that you, I mean, you really, it's eating away at you.
Yeah, it's going to turn into a bush-shaped tumor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. In no penance in the fact that I worked hard for John Kerry in 2004 or nothing like that.
Oh, yeah, there's penance in this. But, you know, I mean, obviously this is a personal issue. And you know it's eating at you. I mean, I think that there's part of you that's hoping she's listening.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you listen. You think Tim's my real name?
Man, you know, you realize, of course, that with the margin in Florida.
He's a good liar.
You know, you could have cost Al Gore the election, homie.
That's right.
I know, absolutely. It's
well, I think you've got, you're going to have to, you know, well, you make up your own mind. You know what you got to do. I mean, if you want to keep it a secret, there's no way she can find out. You know, it'll fade over time.
Yeah.
And then you'll just build on the lie because apparently you have no problem lying. I think you have a pathological lying problem.
Yeah.
Not only that, we're going to trace this call.
What's that, a.k.a. Tim?
Yeah, right.
I guess, I'm just going to have to live with the fact that I might have been part of starting this whole process in 2000, so.
Yeah, well, now I don't even know if you really work for Kerry. I don't know who to believe. You know what I mean? Put your fiance on the phone. Give us her number.
Come on.
I'll have her call you. Right now.
We're going to send her a copy of this tape.
Tell her the truth, man. It's eating at you. Go ahead. Do it.
All right,
bye. Thanks. That guy just did
not
want to hear
it.
He didn't want to
hear it. He's not going to do it.
But he didn't even want to hear it. He was like, oh, really? He knew exactly what we were going to say.
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah, working for Kerry might have erased some of it, but this is like, you know, she's a progressive. She's a liberal. She turned him around. And, you know, whatever he says, he told her what he told her so he could get in. Mm-hmm. And now he's in. And now this thing's just going to eat at him because his relationship's based on a lie.
Well, you know, it would be interesting if now he hears the car pull up in the driveway and his girlfriend get out of the car and slam the door real hard and kind of start stomping toward the door because she heard this.
But think about that. He knew when he told her that was probably at the beginning of their relationship that if he would have said Bush, he wouldn't have had a chance with her.
Yeah.
All right. Now they're going to be married. And this is festering. It's not as bad as, like, you know, having sex with his sister or her sister. Yeah, it's not that bad. It's not as bad as... I don't know. Is there? What do you think about lies on that level? I mean, does it matter what it is if it's really going to compromise the relationship? I mean,
I don't know.
Of course it does.
I had a friend who once confessed. It was actually after he got married, but he confessed to having slept with a couple of women that his wife knew. They're no longer married, but I'm not sure that destroyed their relationship.
Sometimes that person was Mark Riley.
No, okay. Man, that wasn't me.
But that happens sometimes. You go through this phase when you first start dating somebody, or you first start being with somebody, and you run into those women. You're like, oh, did I? Oh man, I did. And she's like, how many people did you sleep with? I mean, that's happened to me because, like, you know, sometimes you forget you've been old, you've been around a certain number of years, you forget. And then, yeah, sometimes it is better just to shut up because it's going to cause aggravation no matter what.
Well, sometimes it does create problems, but it's not problems that you can actually deal with at the time. You just got to let nature take its course.
Yeah, let it fade and cause cancer. Stephanie, listening to the mic in Madison, that's a good station up there. What's your sin, Stephanie?
Hey. Oh, you guys are so awesome. I have two of them that are burdening me. Number one, I am totally addicted to Coca-Cola. And listening to Ring of Fire, I have heard what a horrible company Coca-Cola is, and I've got to get off this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the bigger one is I watch The Apprentice every freaking week.
Oh, man.
I'm totally hooked on The Apprentice. It's off for the summer. You know, I started watching The Bachelor, which really made me feel kind of creepy. But this particular Bachelor was not as bad as the other ones. But
do you like feeling creepy? Because, you know, Trump's pretty creepy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Do you like
yeah.
men with comb-overs? Is that it?
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, his wife. You know, I was talking to my granddaughter last night about, we're talking about Trump, and she says, oh, my grandma, it looks like a stupid movie. They're going to have a Trump movie. And all the money that was spent on this wedding, all these people that are, you know, have nothing. And it's like, you know, it's just yuck, you know?
Yeah, I hear you. Well, as far as the Coca-Cola problem, I've had a Coca-Cola problem before. It's a tough habit to kick, and I haven't kicked it because I still drink Diet Coke. I just don't drink as much. You're just going to have to go cold turkey. But I know it's so enamoring, right? The red and white can, everything about it's great.
Yeah, and it tastes so good.
I know.
Oh, my God, nice and cold, and it's fizzy, and It's just sweet.
I'm going to have to get a Coke now.
Oh, man.
Yeah, but, okay, with The Apprentice thing, well, you know, good news for you is that Donald Trump just recently opened an online university.
Yeah.
So I think as penance, you're going to have to sign up for some courses.
Enroll.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't sound like penance.
No, it doesn't.
This woman is excited. The only reason that's penance is you'll actually be giving Donald Trump your money. How would that make you feel?
Bad? Real good.
Oh, good. Okay, then that's good. That's good.
That's perfect.
As far as the Coca-Cola thing?
Yeah.
Cranberry juice.
Oh, man.
Get some cranberry juice.
Hey, listen, the one thing I have to say, watching a lot of these obnoxious people on The Apprentice, I learned a lot about myself and the things that you know, I probably do that would bug other coworkers and my boss.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and seeing a lot of these people, it just blew me away. But, you know, just it's such a... You know,
well, as long as you learn something. I like the way you're actually rationalizing this as you speak to us.
Yeah.
I know.
So go enroll in Trump's university and the Coca-Cola. Just cut down because I'm just looking at this in a basic level. It's rotting your teeth and it's bad for your stomach.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right, Stephanie.
All right, take
color.
Care, Stephanie.
All right, you bet. We'll be back. Well, actually, we're not going anywhere. Riley and I are going to be sitting
right here
listening as you wait for us to come back with Lawton Smalls at 17 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Charles Barkley. When I want to get caught up on the world events and I can't get in touch with Shaq, MJ, Larry, or Manute Bol, I turn to Mark Maron and Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Y'all ready for this?
Mantis Tiller Cultivator. Put the fun back in gardening. Call now 1-800-211-8001. That's 1-800-211-8001.
Twenty-two past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Robert McChesney is going to be in here to discuss all things media, i.e. Newsweek, PBS, the right-wing slant, the irresponsibility, the whole kit and caboodle as to why we're being misinformed. That's Robert McChesney shortly. Right now, since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Universe. Weird. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world, so now on the phone once again is Planet Push Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. By the way, there's plenty of Indians in Boston.
Uh-huh.
Listen, a lot of good Pandora.
So
may the force be with you, by the way.
Uh-huh.
The force of Jesus.
All right, okay, take it easy. So speaking of Star Wars, here's some of you neocon types are unhappy about the new Star Wars movie.
Mark, who wrote that piece of cow fluff?
Oh, boy.
Ted Kennedy? Tim Robbins? We got to clean up Hollywood, Mark.
So, whoa.
A liberal disaster.
What bothered you so much, Lawton?
Everything.
Oh, no.
But for starters, okay, they're up there in space having a war on terror,
huh? Right,
against the two evildoers, Dooku and Grievous. That's Osama and al-Zarqawi. Clearly.
Okay, if you say so.
So, the chancellor asked for more executive power from the Senate to wipe them out, you know, shock and all.
Come on.
That old boy just wants to keep the liberal surrender monkeys out of the way and get the job done, but what happened?
What?
Those obstructionists, turn their left-wing attack machine on this distinguished patriot and turn him into a mean, wrinkled old wizard.
Oh.
And Tom DeLay all over the
Back up, Lon.
Attack machine.
So the Jedi are the villains?
Let me tell you about the Jedi.
Oh, that's
boy. That's your typical smarty-pants elitist, think they know better than everybody else.
Oh, no.
Look at my lightsaber. Aren't you impressed?
Oh,
woo-hoo-hoo.
Oh, boy.
Academics, artists, scientists, all in their tinfoil hats, all hiding behind their fancy degrees.
Uh-huh,
We're up to the Jedi. They'd try to talk the terrorists to death.
Okay, you know what? I'm not buying it. What about Yoda? Is he in on the conspiracy, too?
Oh, Yoda. Who's that little lizard supposed to be, anyway? Robert Byrd?
Oh, man.
I don't need a lecture on national security from some green Muppet.
Oh, boy.
Can't even put together a complete sentence. Stupid, he does talk, Mark.
Oh, God.
Stupid.
Hey, but wait, whoa, back up. The pre-Vader character is clearly headed down the path toward evil.
All right, Mark, just because a brat kid wants to join the party, learn the ropes
of
the chancellor, kind of like Rick Santorum, suddenly he's evil and he's gone to the dark side. That's just hate speech, Mark, hate speech. Believe me, we don't let the dark side into our party. Never have. Not even Alan Keyes. We don't let it happen.
Come on.
Not
at one point, Anakin says, if you're not with me, then you're my enemy. Sound familiar, my friend?
Is the Gettysburg Address familiar, Mark?
It's just
offensive to me. Some Hollywood director would turn one of George W. two-term mandate Bush's greatest proclamations into some kind of a sick Jedi punch.
Well, you know what, Lawton? This is a work of fiction. It's a work of fiction. If you're upset by what's in it, maybe you should ask yourself why you're so upset. Is it because it shows an out-of-touch leader who oversteps his bounds and leads people into a meaningless war? Is it because the Emperor tries to manipulate the Senate to further his own selfish ends? Let me be more direct, my friend. Is it because Bush is exactly like that evil bastard in the movie?
The biggest Star Wars fan in the world.
Wow. Okay.
I went to the premiere last week dressed as Chewbacca.
Oh.
My bed was covered with Ewok baby.
Oh, boy.
You know, I see Star Wars movies 50 or 60 times just to escape my miserable reality. And then they show me a story about how bad Bush is.
Oh.
And it's true.
Yes.
He's a Sith.
Yes.
He's a freaking Sith.
All right. All right. Take it easy. Take it easy, buddy. Just, all right. Let it out, you freak. All right, just take it easy. It's just a movie, dude, all right? All right, just, you all right? Okay. Just, all right, get hold of yourself. Oh, my God, what is that?
I think I caught your cold. And why has Obi-Wan got a beard in this? Are we supposed to think he's Jesus? Because that's wrong. That's blasphemous.
Goodbye, Lawton.
Blasphemous.
Goodbye, Lawton.
God loves you, Mark. Deal with it.
Yeah, that's what I hear. Yeah, okay. Take care. You know, he keeps getting, you know.
I know.
His outbursts are getting a little more peculiar, aren't they?
Peculiar. That's a nice way of putting it.
The sounds that are coming out of him are peculiar. I've been dying to talk to Robert McChesney. I've had his books. I've read some of his stuff. You know, he's a very outspoken critic of the media.
Yeah.
He's also the editor of the Future of Media, Resistance and Reform in the 21st Century. This is an important topic for a lot of progressives and everyone in America. I hope he's got some solutions because we're losing the truth in this country.
Well, yeah, and, you know, we got Newsweek, we got PBS, we got Fox. What are we supposed to do? Find out next here on Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Begins with M. Moron at the microphone. M.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
Air America Radio's Morning Tradition. You might want to watch Air America Radio's Morning Sedition co-host Mark Riley on MSNBC's Connected Coast to Coast tonight. He's replacing Ron Reagan Jr. Up against Monica Crowley, 5 p.m. Eastern Time. All right, Riley.
Yeah.
The world will be watching.
Uh-oh.
How does one news outlet, Newsweek in this case, become responsible for all of the anti-American sentiment in Afghanistan? How do journalists who do real investigative reporting become branded as part of the liberal intelligentsia? How is it that PBS, one of the last bastions of real objective journalism, gets targeted by the right, who then set about destroying it and what is to be done about it? We're joined on the phone by Robert McChesney. He's one of the founders of Free Press and co-editor of The Future of Media, Resistance and Reform in the 21st Century, which releases at the end of this week. Bob, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Mark.
Hey, Bob. When people ask me about the liberal media, I say there is no liberal media. There's only right-wing media and irresponsible media. Is that true?
You've nailed it on the head right there. That's, you've got it nailed. We can end our interview now.
Okay. But wait, no, I'm completely frightened because I know that, you know, when we started Air America, we'd get phone calls from people that just didn't, never even heard the point of view that we put forth on our station on the air. And I think that if things keep continuing the way they are, we're going to be completely cut off from reality, and these same people are going to feel crazy.
Well, you know, I think the Newsweek incident, which you alluded to at the top of the interview here, really gets at the heart of the matter. Here we've got a major crisis push, or supposed crisis scandal, pushed by the administration heavily. So all the right-wing echo chamber goes into high gear, and then the remaining sort of mainstream, so-called mainstream media, like Milquetoast, goes along with the flow. A huge scandal about sourcing on what is, by all accounts, it's probably a true story. At any rate, it's well-documented. We've done far worse things to prisoners in Guantanamo and Iraq than mess with their Koran.
Certainly.
So, I mean, we've got this tempest, this ridiculous debate here. At the exact same time right now, there's a memo from British intelligence that came out, was published May 1st on London Times, which shows the Bush administration doctored its intelligence consciously before the war to try to promote, quote, pro-war attitudes in the United States. I mean, this is like, they call it the smoking gun memo, barely getting a sniff in the U.S. news media. I don't think there's a more striking example of the fundamental flaws of our system today.
You know, Bob, it seems to me that when you start looking at the state of journalism today, you start looking around, and I have to say that public broadcasting has been an oasis for a time in terms of the kinds of issues that it will tackle, perhaps that others in the, quote, mainstream media will not. But we see that PBS is under attack, and certainly the Corporation for Public Broadcasting as well. There was a piece in the L.A. Times at the beginning of the month that argued that the solution to this for progressives is to cut the ties and actually have PBS sell off a lot of its assets so it can continue to broadcast on cable. Good idea or bad idea?
Really lame idea. I mean, that's no friend of PBS. It's friends like that who needs enemies. You know, what we have going on PBS is really a scandal in the making. Once again, if the Republicans didn't control both sides of Congress, not only would there be an investigation, you may well have impeachable offenses here, because Ken Tomlinson, the new head of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, Bush's hand-picked head, his job as head of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting is to protect all the stations that get funding. And that's not just NPR and PBS stations. That's all the Pacifica stations, most of the community radio stations. Protect them from any political interference from the White House or Congress. And that's his stated legal position. Instead, what he's done is secretly lead a one-man vendetta against his own self-determined liberal bias of public broadcasting, specifically going after Bill Moyers and the Now Show, doing this with secret polls, secret monitoring, an absolute outrage what he's doing. And, you know, I think there's no doubt when one looks at this, this has nothing to do with a concern about bias at PBS. Because, I mean, if there's sociological evidence about bias at PBS, you'd say, why aren't there consumer shows or labor shows? Where are the shows with people of color chairing them? That's the real problem they have there, by all accounts, except his. Instead, it's just that, you know, they want PBS and NPR basically to be converted into Fox News Lite and having the same narrow range of opinion. And more importantly, they didn't like the investigative journalism that Bill Moyers did, not only against the Bush administration, but be fair to Bill Moyers, it's the same journalism he was doing against Clinton.
So we're talking to Robert McChesney. He's one of the founders of Free Press. Look, let me give that website, too. So www.freepress.net. Well, you know, we talk about this. You say impeachable offense. You say you're telling exactly like it is and what's going on. And certainly I get a range of emails about this. I sign petitions about things. But how can do you think, in your eyes, can we facilitate some change around these problems?
Well, I think we've seen tremendous developments in the last 2 years. What happened in 2003 when the Bush administration tried to get rid of the media ownership limits on media firms, we saw an uprising of the people of this country. 3 million people signed petitions, called members of Congress and SEC. And it was that popular uprising that the court cited when they threw out the FCC's efforts to change the media ownership rules. I think we're going to see the same thing in the next 6 months around public broadcasting. We've been struck at Free Press by the wellspring of support there is for the idea of having non-commercial, non-profit broadcasting service in this country and how appalled people are at the idea that the government's going to try to secretly determine what the political content should be and attack someone like Bill Moyers. I think that this stuff won't work. The only way they get away with this stuff, like they did last fall when Sinclair Broadcasting was going to do its propaganda piece against Kerry, the only way they can pull this stuff off is they do it quietly and the public doesn't know about it. As soon as the public hears about it, they can't win because the public gets outraged. And that's why it's such an easy issue to organize around for Free Press.
Bob McChesney, one of the things that I have been looking at for some time in terms of certainly community broadcasting is the whole issue of low-power FM radio stations, which apparently somebody has bottled up somewhere. I mean, there was a point at which they were going to start issuing those licenses. Next thing you know, you had conglomerates buying up a lot of those licenses. Wasn't that an area where some of the people who want some level of fair and investigative journalism might have looked?
Yeah, I mean, low-power FM probably wasn't going to generate a lot of investigative journalism because investigative journalism costs money, takes resources. But what it was going to be able to do was in cities like New York, a town like Brooklyn or the Bronx, could have a handful of these stations on the dial, and people in the community, nonprofit groups, could set up their own stations, serve their own communities with music, cultural stuff, local reporting perhaps. And it's really a wonderful technology, and there's lots of slots in the dial. The industry hates low-power FM. They don't want competition for what they consider their listeners. They think they own the airwaves since they own the politicians that allocate them. And it's been a huge fight we've been organizing on, not just at Free Press, but across this movement, to force the government to do the policy that's in place to sort of launch 1,000 of these stations. And we're making some headway. They've actually issued a number of the licenses in the last year. And even the Republicans on the FCC acknowledge they have to give these out now due to popular pressure. But we've got a ways to go. But it's a very exciting promise to have these stations. And the most important thing to keep in mind and why this is an important issue is that in media reform, unlike campaign finance reform, you can win small victories. You know, in campaign finance reform, you basically have to get publicly funded elections. You leave a crack that some big, you know, you can drive a truck through and destroy the spirit of the reform. We can win tangible, discrete victories here, and that sort of builds momentum for future victories.
Well, I got another question in terms of information, in terms of investigative information. Obviously, there was never a time that, you know, television and news outlets, you know, divulged everything. It takes a lot of courage and a lot of investigation and a lot of money, as you said, to really, you know, break big stories. But obviously, a lot of those are being, you know, stifled in mainstream outlets. Now, what about... Is the blogosphere the answer in the big picture, or do you see that your public airways must be utilized to get the message out to a broader amount of the public and figure out how to do that so the right-wing outlets don't just, you know, spin it to be ineffective?
The blogosphere is part of the solution. The Internet's been terrific, but I think, you know, ultimately to have a viable media system, we have to have some media that have the resources to do really good work. We have to have some media that can send people to Iraq and to Iran and to the Middle East and to Europe and cover it and have trained, skilled reporters covering it.
How's that going to happen, Robert?
Well, that's what policy is all about. We currently subsidize our media system to the tune of tens, maybe hundreds of billions of dollars through granting monopoly licenses, copyright extension. We have subsidies. They're just subsidies that are given to powerful firms to suit their self-interest. We've got to come up with enlightened policies to create a media that will serve our interests, not just the interests of the shareholders in 5 or 10 companies.
Okay.
Bob McChesney, do most people that you've come in contact with still believe that the airwaves belong to the people?
You know, it's striking. I think that the most recent research I've seen suggests that most people don't understand that. And once they understand that it's public property, like a national forest or like the waterways, They're outraged at how we give them away for free to private firms, and then we police those monopolies we give away. They make large amounts of money, and they do nothing in return for them. It's sort of like a light switch goes on once people understand that.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about, you know, what's at your website and what this new book's about and how it's going to help people out in getting some of this stuff you're talking about done.
Yeah, Free Press was founded 3 years ago by myself and John Nichols, who writes for The Nation.
We know him. He's on our show a lot.
Yeah.
And Josh Silver, who's a campaign finance activist. And it's based up in Northampton. We've got 15 full-time organizers working for it. And it basically tries to help mobilize popular involvement in media policy decision-making in Washington on all the issues we've been talking about, and also on things like community internet access, beating the digital divide. We've got a website which is sort of a portal to the entire movement at www.freepress.net. It gives comprehensive daily updates on the newswire. It's indexed. It has a list of all the groups working on all the issues. It's easy to access. I'd urge people to go there to get up to speed on this movement.
I think we actually pulled the speech from Bill Moyers off Free Press.
Yeah, Bill's been one of our big supporters. He's a real hero, I think, for a lot of people working in this movement because, you know, he really typifies a principled commitment to journalism. As I said earlier, a point that's got to be emphasized, Bill Moyers is not a partisan hack. It wasn't like when Bill Clinton was in office, Bill was like pulling his punches and looking the other way. He applied the same journalism, the same investigation to Bill Clinton's administration he's done to George W. Bush, and that's what an honest journalist does.
Right, and that's, and the reason that you had to say that was because, you know, the right-wing media has, you know, begun to spin him that direction.
Yeah, isn't that really ironic? Here are these right-wing blowhards who don't do any research at all, any journalism at all, and purely shill for this administration, have the nerve to go after Bill Moyers for being partisan.
It's unbelievable. Hey, if you see John Nichols, say, hey, brother, for me, will you?
I'll be talking to him today. Okay. To see you.
Well, thanks a lot for joining us, Robin McChesney. It was great talking to you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
you take
Bob.
Care. Bob's book is, of course, he's written a few books, but the new one is an edited bunch. It's several different writers, The Future of Media, Resistance and Reform in the 21st Century, will be out at the end of the week. We're going to come back, close some stuff up, maybe have the cliff notes for you. If you got something you want to tell us, 866-303-2270 is our number. We'll have some statements at the it's the end of our show, but Air America goes on forever, my friend.
That's right.
46 past the hour.
Morning Sedition.
This is the Wake Up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Evaluate for 30 days. Call now 1-800-900-2657. That's 1-800-900-2657.
All right, let's land this thing. It's 50 past the hour. Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'll tell you, I had a big breakthrough today. I don't care if anyone noticed it, but I noticed it, my friends. I was cranky yesterday. I was a big baby, Riley, and I brought it in here with me today. So if you're driving to work and you're feeling like a pouty baby, don't bring it into work with you. Take care of yourself and realize that just because you work someplace does not mean that those people have to be your parents. Do you understand? Do you understand what I'm saying? Do not walk around the world like a kid lost at a mall. You know why? Because people aren't going to help you. All right? These guys in here, they didn't help me today. No, they just sat around and talked about sports, like, which actually alienated me more because I don't care. All right? So I sat there pouting, and you know what? I feel better now. I feel like I've broken through something, and I'm going to cry a little bit. How's that grab you?
How about them Pistons, Maron?
Stop it. Stop it. I just got through it. I feel,
and
like,
block.
I feel like a man. So,
anything else?
So listen, baby men, don't go into work pouting. Neither, no women either. No pouting today, okay? No self-pity, no pouting. That's my little advice for today. What are you laughing at, Kayla? What are you laughing at? Can a guy have a breakthrough? Can't you open up a little bit?
I hope you take your own advice, my friend.
That's what does that mean?
Hey, next Monday, if I roll that tape of what you just said, I hope you will understand.
Okay, well, look, you know, at least I admit to being pouty and self-pitying, but yeah, I have actually seen you bitchy. How does that grab you?
Of course.
I just want to make sure that this is all going around. You're not just taking advantage of, you know, maybe a little bit of
freedom.
So I just want
to. But my bitchiness compared to your issues.
I have an issue.
I can't hold a candle
hey,
to
dude,
you, my
dude,
friend.
You're talking to Mark the Vacuum Marin. I can suck the energy out of a room like you wouldn't believe. Literally, cars were rolling across this country. Tires were deflating because of my attitude coming through the speakers yesterday.
You actually killed souls.
As they were traveling to heaven?
I drained them a little bit, but they were all replenished. You know, you're allotted a certain amount of chi in one lifetime. Hey, I wanted to bring this up because we didn't bring it up yet, is that the Creation Museum just outside of Cincinnati in Kentucky is going to be a reality, apparently.
Yeah.
And I got a list of some of the exhibits at the Creationist Museum. That will be, as I said, in northern Kentucky. If you'd like to know some of these, here I have a list of them. God's Weekly Planner, day 1 through 7. How about that? Intelligent Design, from Adam to IKEA. This is really great because it starts in the Garden of Eden and ends with my coffee table. All right. Earth, 5,000 years young. Nothing? All right, here we go. We're number one. Why we didn't come from monkeys. Which is... Dinosaurs, the Phoenician's friend. That's for the history buffs. Anything? All right, here we go. Jews, chosen for what?
Oh, now see.
Here's another exhibit. The Science Swindle. That's going to be it with dioramas and everything. here we go. Model of Tyrannosaurus Rex labeled dog with question mark. How about this one? This is the opening exhibit when it opens. Darwin, Dar-lose. How's that for you? Also, revisiting a couple of top stories. First of all, sun might be good for you. We've got a lot of listeners in Florida. There's a real good chance that the vitamin D you get from sun actually is cancer preventative. Though some cancers do are caused from sun on the skin, but most of those are treatable. And apparently some people believe that that is far less than the number of people that will be helped from the vitamin D in their bloodstream. This is causing caused quite a schism in the dermatological community.
Yeah.
Because some people believe that the sun is bad for you. Now some people are saying we're like plants, only it's not chlorophyll, it's vitamin D. So use your judgment. And this is to my mother. Mom, no, there's no way the amount of sun that you get is good for you in any way. There's just no way. Sometimes I think my mom is cold-blooded.
Oh, hey! No, Lord.
But it's warmed up. It's warmed up. Also, let's close up on the should we talk about the filibuster quickly? There's been a compromise made.
A deal!
Yeah, a deal that just puts it off, and now all of a sudden, you know, the Republicans get three nominees through nonetheless, and they can tell the Democrats that they're overstepping their bounds and still put the nuclear option into play if they feel so
inclined.
Yes, most likely they will be inclined during the Supreme Court nominations, which was a reminder by Rehnquist, there was smoke and dry ice, and he came out in his wheelchair and he looked almost dead, and it sort of made that issue very prominent in the heads of Republican senators.
Yeah, really. It's starting to scare me, man. Who are they going to nominate? David Duke to the Supreme Court?
I don't know. For those of you who are just tuning in, catching the end here, here are some highlights of what we already talked about in the program. It's time for Morning Sedition's Cliff Notes. Chief Justice Rehnquist visits the Capitol Medical Department. Worried Democrats tried to offer Rehnquist the blood of 100 virgin liberals to prolong his life. Oh, my God. If Rehnquist dies, they might put in another Rehnquist. You see, nothing really matters. Give up. That's what I'm saying. This is all that matters. I'm Mark Marin. Love me. Please love me. All right. Trump unveils launch of Trump University. One of the courses is called Horrors. Being one, buying one. Scientists say sunshine may prevent cancer. Scientists did caution that those orange-brown older guys with gray chest hair still, quote, look pretty creepy. Today's phrase just dropped this into conversation. The sun is actually good for you. Cigarettes make you live longer. And Agent Orange brings plants back to life. Wake up, sheeple. Nothing is true unless a company pays for someone to say it. Someone bought the sun. It's only a matter of time before they turn it off on us.
Uh-oh.
Those are your Morning Sedition clip notes. And, pretty funny.
Well, hey, you know, is the Earth 4.5 billion years old or is it only 6,000?
Every day is the beginning of the world to me.
That's a good way to look at the world.
Yeah, I wish I could do it more effectively. I dragged yesterday into the studio with me for the first hour today. But as I said, it's a new day dawning. It's a new Mark Maron. Tomorrow morning, we'll have Michael Ratner, president of the Center for Constitutional Rights.
Good guy.
Going to talk about why torture is wrong, if it's unclear to some of you.
We're going to be talking to a certain Mark Maron, but only in the future somewhere, somehow.
2 days away from Radio Theater, Morning Sedition Radio Theater, and Future Mark, yes.
Yeah, have a good one, Maron.